Hello there once again, and welcome to this very special edition of Musings on Golf. Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bupka. We are on the eve of the 151st Open at Royal Liverpool Hoylake. And Bob got a special guest today, and Tommy Roy. For 30 years, he's the guy who's brought all the wonderful pictures to our viewers in America from NBC Sports coverage of the Open Championship and many other major championships. Had a great talk with Tommy the other day. He's ready to go starting tomorrow, I can tell you that much.
Oh, you're right about that, Kelly. And it's quite an honor to be able to have Musings on Golf with Tommy Roy. Tommy Roy is by far the single greatest producer of TV golf. And I hesitate in saying that because I'll even backtrack a little bit. He probably tied with Frank Chekinian, who did so much TV golf and obviously well-known for the Masters. But Tommy Roy has sprinkled his genius over the NBC networks for the past 30 years. And I really think our listeners are going to enjoy finding out some of what happens behind the scenes whenever you turn your television on to watch a golf tournament.
Yeah, you're going to get some great insights from Tommy. And I like that term sprinkled because not only has he covered golf and produced golf, but Bob, so much work that he put into the Olympics. He talks a lot about Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals in the 2008 Summer Games. This is a guy who's seen it all and done it all, really, when it comes to the production of sporting events at the highest of levels.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see how many of our listeners agree with Tommy Roy. Tommy Roy emphatically stated to me that the greatest sporting achievement in history was Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals at the Olympics. So we'll see what our listeners have to say. They can drop us a line, and if they have another candidate that they would like to nominate, we'd be all ears for that.
Yeah, I love that. You can certainly use my Facebook page for Kelly Elbin when I post that interview with Tommy on Wednesday. Hope you enjoy that. What you're going to hear from Tommy, he's going to talk about drones. He's going to talk about a lot of the technology that goes into the current broadcast and what you'll see over the 4 days of the Open Championship. And you'll hear from Tommy Roy right after this from Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, for the past 30 years, the fantastic pictures we've seen on NBC Sports coverage of professional golf have been driven by our guest today. Tommy Roy has produced 24 U.S. Opens, every Ryder Cup since 1993, and this week he's at Royal Liverpool for his 7th Open, where NBC Sports will present nearly 50 hours of live championship coverage. Tommy Roy, thanks for joining us, and welcome to Musings on Golf.
Well, thank you, Kelly. Glad to be with you.
Hey, Tommy, you're awfully close to where the Beatles made their name. And when people ask me about Tommy Roy, I say, well, whatever the Beatles were to music, that's what Tommy Roy is to golf producing.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. We are close here to the Beatles, and that you'll see a lot of references to them on the broadcast over the 4 days.
You wouldn't be telling the story if you didn't do that, and nobody tells the story any better than you. You know, one compliment that I have for you, I'm not even positive anybody else has ever mentioned this to you, but you have somebody working with you named Tommy Randolph, and Tommy Randolph's a very talented individual in his own right, but he has no aspirations of leaving Tommy Roy, which is so unusual, but it only clearly indicates how talented you are.
Well, yeah, we've done a lot of events together. Very grateful to have him on the team. And it is a total team effort doing these broadcasts. You know, I tell people that our cameramen are every bit the athletes that the players are. To be standing 300 yards away with a camera on your shoulder, following a golf ball flying at 180 miles an hour up against a gray sky, and to keep it in the frame and in focus, it's incredible. Our audio guys, our graphics people, the replay, and of course the announcers, but crucial to the telecast is Tom Randolph, who he played his college golf at UCLA. He was on the same team with Corey Pavin. Pavin was number one, Tom was number two, and we were very fortunate that Tom ended up coming to television and instead of pursuing a career in the game, because he was a good player. And he's like Rain Man, because he's the guy that keeps track of where all the players are, what shots they're hitting, and gets us from shot to shot. So he's just fabulous.
Well, it's kind of you to say that. I know Tommy will be happy to hear it, but I'm pretty sure he knows how good he is. Is it true, Tommy Roy, that you pretty much insist that anybody that comes to work for you plays golf?
Yeah, it is. When I first started, NBC Sports was known for the live coverage of football and baseball and basketball, and golf is where I started as a runner, an errand boy. And I was sort of astounded that a lot of the people that worked on the crew, they didn't know golf, the intricacies of golf, the history of it, who the players were. You know, they went out and they covered shots, but they weren't aficionados at it. So when I started producing, I felt it was really important to find people that were golfers first and then got in the TV business. So nowadays, when we get off the air doing a like a West Coast PGA Tour event and there's some sunlight left, all of our cameramen are loading their clubs up to go play. And, everyone's getting together to go in, get a quick nine holes in after we get off the air. So it's people that are passionate about the game that we have on the team. And that's been crucial.
We're speaking with Tommy Roy, and it's an utmost pleasure to have him with us on Musings on Golf. Tommy, as you're readying yourself and your crew for the 151st Open, what are the differences in producing golf coverage from the UK versus the US?
Well, the first thing is over here, we are using the World Feed as the primary video that we have, whereas in the States, we're controlling all the shot-by-shot coverage. But we're lucky that the World Feed is now done by European Tour Productions that do the European Tour every week. They're fabulous. And then we collaborate with them to add some of our own cameras in. And I'm very close to the producer and director for them. And we're able to get a product that we really like. So it's good. Again, it's not entirely in our control, but we're very happy with it. But the other big thing is just being over here in the logistics of everything. It's like half our crew is arriving here, in the last day or two, and a third of them are missing, their suitcases, and, getting to and from the compound is different. But that doesn't mean that I'm complaining, because this is a real blessing to be able to produce the coverage of this event. I just can't explain it, how special getting a chance to work on the Open is, and we love it, and so it's great being here.
Yeah, it was certainly a thrill for me last year. I made it a point to be at St. Andrews for the 150th, and seeing Tiger coming down that 18th fairway, being with Jack when he got that special award as a citizen of St. Andrews. I'm going to go off script for one question. I hope Kelly, my partner, doesn't get mad at me.
Oh, never! But that would never happen.
But I've been thinking lately, Tom, as I watch your coverage, and I think it's excellent, I've come to the conclusion that maybe the single biggest change in producing golf coverage lately has been the introduction of the drone.
Yeah, well, the drone has been special. And last week, well, a week and a half ago, we did the U.S. Women's Open out at Pebble. And I don't know if the drone has ever looked that good. It was spectacular. But it does allow us to show these holes from new angles You know, like we've had the airplane in the past, but the drone can just get really special, artsy looking angles that I think helps the viewer at home really understand what the golfers are facing. Like where we had that thing out at the seventh hole there at Pebble over the shoulder of the players, and you could see what they were looking down that hill at. And yeah, I agree with you. It's been fabulous.
Well, I know your father, Billy Roy, was a golf professional, and I understand he got you a job at the 1978 Tucson Open as a gopher. Look what you parlayed that into.
Yeah, it was out in Tucson there. I was going to the University of Arizona, and it was during our Christmas break. I was looking, I wanted to get a job, so I asked my dad to help me out. So he reached out to the people at Tucson National, and so when I went out to the course to find out what my job was, I said, well, you can either take coffee to the NBC cameraman, or you can work in one of the portable bars on the golf course. Well, I'd known the guy who had done this job the year before, and not only did the club pay him, but NBC gave this guy a rent-a-car for the week. And so I didn't know anything about television. My sole motivation for taking this NBC job was to get that rent-a-car and drive the heck out of it for the week. And I did. But I went into the control room when they were on the air, and I saw, you know, this sort of controlled chaos in there and how exciting it was, and knew that that's what I wanted to do eventually. Well, it turned out that they had the Bob Hope telecast the very next week. And so they asked me, hey, can you come over there and work for us as a runner? So I said, sure, that's fine. It was still my Christmas break. So went over, did that. And then when that week ended, they said, hey, can you do the whole spring tour for us? Which meant I had to drop out of school for that spring semester. And I did. And my parents weren't too thrilled about it, but it's turned out to be the right decision. You know, I still got my degree. It took me an extra year, but hooking up with NBC at that time was just awesome. And then when I graduated from college, the great Don Olmeyer, you know, who's one of the legends of our business, was the executive producer of NBC Sports at the time, and he hired me full time, and away we went from there.
Probably the best hire Don Olmeyer ever made.
Yeah, and Tommy, what, talk about the influence that Mr. Olmeyer's had on your career.
Yeah, well, he was very incredible in the truck. Now, you know, maybe I was more impressionable because I was seeing, you know, this stuff taking place for the very first time. But I have to say that watching him in the truck and what he did was just off the charts good. And, you know, the way he handled himself as a leader was, you know, to learn from that. And then obviously his protege, well, not protege, but a guy he worked with growing up at ABC Sports was Dick Ebersol. Dick Ebersol became our boss at NBC Sports. And, you know, and that's definitely the guy that I learned the most from. You know, he was unbelievable, and he gave me the most opportunity. He was producing Saturday Night Live, and I happened to be dating a girl that worked on the Saturday Night Live crew. And so I would go to the studio quite often to visit her, and Dick would always come over. You know, I was just a PA then, a production assistant, and Dick would always come over and say hi to me because I was another guy from sports, you know, and he didn't have any of those people around him. So when he ended up becoming president of NBC Sports, I was the only guy he knew. And so I ended up getting a lot of plum assignments, including he made me the first producer of our NBA and NBC coverage, you know, where I got to produce the first three championships of the Bulls and the original Dream Team. And then, you know, he made me the executive producer of NBC Sports, where I was in charge of everything. So it was just, it was great. So, but it all started with Don Olmeyer.
Did you marry that girl?
I did not.
Well, you better send us some thank you notes. I know that much.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're so pleased to be joined by Tommy Roy, the legendary producer for NBC Sports Golf Coverage, winner of 29 Emmy Awards throughout his distinguished career. Okay, Tommy, please give our listeners a sense of what it's like. I know it's a little bit different in the UK, but when you're in control at the US Open or PGA Tour events, what's it like being in that control room in terms of how many people are there, the rush of it all? And are you and Tom Randolph, are you the ones who are directing? How does the whole process work?
Yep. So we have myself and Tom Randa, who's my co-producer, and then we have two directors in there, two technical directors, which are the guys pushing the buttons to put the cameras on the air, and then an associate director and a PA. So eight of us in there. It's quite chaotic when people, you know, when you walk in there, it seems to people, but it's all like an orchestra for us in there. But people are kind of shocked usually when they come into the control room for the first time, because if you're sitting at home watching golf, it's sort of a passive experience, you know, where there's, you know, quiet golf claps and all that, but in the control room, because it's not just one ball in play, there's 70 balls in play. We're not broadcasting from one field, we're broadcasting from 18 fields. And when we go to commercial, as opposed to football, baseball, basketball, where they stop play, you know, you can kind of catch your breath and then regroup and figure out what you're going to do coming out of the break. In golf, they don't ever stop. So we work even harder during the breaks to make sure we're recording the shots that are important. And then when we're coming out of the break, figuring out, okay, are we going live? Are we going to, you know, catch up on a couple things that we missed? So it's just way more complicated. Other than the Olympics, because of its sheer size, golf is the hardest to do. And I can say that from experience, because I've done them all. And but it's also the most rewarding. And you know, I'm very lucky that that, you know, golf is not only my vocation, it's my hobby too. So when I'm not working it, I'm playing. So it makes it double the fun to be a part of it.
How good of a player are you?
I am currently a 5.8.
Wow. Sounds like a sandbagger to me. Kelly, Kelly, I don't want to interrupt, but I have to bring this up. This is going to mark 2 weeks in a row that we have world record holders, because last week we had the pleasure of spending some time with Gary Player, and he, you know, reminded us that he's traveled more than any human being on the face of the earth.
The first time, was that the first time he's ever reminded anybody of that, Bob?
But, and now we have Tommy Roy, who has consumed more Diet Pepsis than anybody in the history of the world. You're addicted to that,
Pepsis.
Right?
They're not Diet Pepsis. It's
regular.
It's full test. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so how many of you go through in the course of a typical open round?
Well, probably about six.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then got to rush to the bathroom a couple of times, but I've perfected. Yeah, I've perfected rushing, getting back within 2 minutes. So,
you can.
Yep.
Better not be anybody in that bathroom when you're heading their way.
That can be a problem.
Hey, you mentioned about having, you know, 18 holes in play, and I know in your coverage in producing the U.S. Open, it's been important for you to try to get every player in the field shown at least once over the first two rounds. Why does that matter to you, and have you been successful in doing that?
Yeah, I just feel like that if you as a player has qualified to play in that championship, then you deserve the chance to be shown on TV at some point, hitting some sort of a meaningful shot. So that's why I make sure we get all 156 players on the air. They've earned it. They've earned that right. And so we do it. We have been successful. Every U.S. Open we've done since we've picked it up again at Wingfoot there. So, yeah, it's important, and we do it.
There's been a lot of changes in the production aspect of covering golf. What was it like? How was it different, I should say, Tommy, on producing events 30 years ago versus now?
Well, it's interesting. When I first started, the equipment was so much bigger, you know, and heavier. And like there was the cable for one camera was an inch thick. And you would have to use a forklift to get it out of the truck to reel it down the fairway. So, and every microphone had its own cable, and it would take the guys, and we were only covering the last like eight holes, and it would take the guys a full week to set that up. And nowadays we have fiber optic cable the size of your pinky, and 28 feeds can run down that one cable. So 28 cameras, microphones, all that. So nowadays it takes a day and a half to set up 18 holes. So, you know, from a financial standpoint, business standpoint, much more effective. There's an appetite for all the hours that we do. So when I first started, there was no Thursday or Friday telecast. The Saturday telecast was only an hour and a half, and Sunday we were on the air for 2 hours. And nowadays, you know what it's like. We're on the air for hours and hours and hours. But again, there's an appetite from the viewers, and then the advertisers are willing to sponsor all those hours. So that's why we're on. So that's the biggest change. But the other two things that I think are important are the fact that the miniaturized equipment, where we can put like cameras in bunkers now. At the U.S. Open, John Wood had a camera underneath the bill of his cap so people could see what he was seeing. We weren't using that on the air. It was, you know, a thing that was being used in a side telecast. But, you know, that helps people see what's going on from the drone. But to me, the biggest change is high def when that became, you know, a standard deal here in all sports. Because it's funny, we roll in these clips of things that happened back in the 90s and that in standard def. And I see that go by, I go, how could we possibly have been watching golf and enjoying it back then? Because you couldn't see the ball. And in particular, you couldn't see the undulation on the greens and the movement in the fairways. And as golfers, you guys know that is absolutely crucial to understanding what kind of a golf shot is required or what sort of a putt is required to be able to see that. And that what you can do nowadays with high def.
Hey, Kelly, I'm going to ask Tommy something, because the massive changes, obviously, in television, I think he'll get a kick. You know, when I started out doing play-by-play of golf tournaments on the radio, here's how it was done, Tommy. I'd be out on the golf course, and I'd have my cassette recorder, and I would call a putt on the 14th hole, and then I had a runner there, and he would take that cassette, run it into the anchor, who was Al Wester, and then Al Wester would say, now let's go out to the 14th hole and see what's happening. And they would play that cassette. So you can see how archaic it was in radio and television. The leaps and bounds that you have orchestrated is just mind-boggling.
Well, I think we need to get that cassette and put it in the World Golf Hall of Fame, because that's
yeah. Hey, Tommy, 2008, 15 years ago, was an extraordinary year, obviously, with what Tiger did essentially on one leg in winning the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And then you produced the swimming events in Beijing at the Summer Games. Talk a little bit, please, about what, from a golf standpoint, was what Tiger did sort of the pinnacle of what you've produced? And then I read that you referred to Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals as the single greatest athletic achievement in human history. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about both of those unbelievable events that were just a few months apart.
Yeah, sure. So let me start with Michael. So I actually said the greatest achievement in recorded human history, because who knows if some caveman, you know, fended off 5 woolly mammoths, you know, in one day. That's probably got, you know, takes it all. But what Michael did was incredible, because, you know, most swimmers specialize in their stroke, you know, the freestyle, backstroke, fly in the breast, and they specialize in a particular distance. And for him to win 8, he had to master all the strokes and swim from 100 meters up to 400 meters. And he wasn't just facing guys that were in a league, you know, he was facing the best on the planet every single race. And to pull that off, it's never going to be done again. In golf, I would liken it to winning 8 consecutive majors. And those majors wouldn't be played in their normal 2-year rotation. They'd be played back to back to back to back to back the way he did it. And so obviously that's never going to be done again. And it turns out he's not only is he a great athlete, but a great human being as well. So that was a real treat. And it's funny that I was lucky enough to do that. like a month and a half right after Tiger won the U.S. Open out there at Torrey. And so for the longest time, the 99 Ryder Cup was the greatest event that I ever got a chance to produce, you know, with that amazing comeback up at Brookline on the last day and Justin Leonard making the putt. And, you know, to me, that was the pinnacle until 2008. And what happened there, that's when Tiger was in his prime. But he was injured, had the broken leg, you know, and we weren't sure what we were going to get. And every day he got off to a terrible start. I think he doubled the first hole, I think three of the 4 days, and bogeyed it the other day. But then would make this comeback towards the end of the round. And so on Saturday is when he made eagle at 13, chipped in at 17, and made eagle at 18. And I remember getting off the air and telling, you know, like Dan Hicks, I go, can you imagine if this would have been Sunday, how incredible this would have been? I mean, it would have been off the charts. Then we get to Sunday, and then that's where Tiger has to make the expect anything different putt, you know, just to make the playoffs. So that was, you know, even more exciting. And then we get to Monday, the playoff, and it goes 18 holes. They're still tied, and he has to win in sudden death. So like I remember when Jack won the 86 Masters and how exciting that was. But it was on a Sunday afternoon, and the stretch of exciting golf was about 2 hours long, even though it was great. But this U.S. Open in 08 was like three full days of jaw-dropping drama, you know, and so it was just amazing. And man, I was lucky to do that. And it's funny, Fred Godelli, who's our great Sunday night football producer, said to me, do you realize how lucky you were to get those two events, you know, that close together? And we ended up winning the Emmy for the Live Sports special for the U.S. Open, which is basically the best broadcast of the year. And then we won the Emmy for the event for the Olympics. So, it was great that we enjoyed it, but also that our colleagues in this business appreciated the work we did.
Oh, absolutely. I saw you mentioned Dan Hicks, and obviously he and Paul Azinger will be behind the mics, but did I see Sir Nick Faldo's name as well as part of the broadcast crew for the Open?
He is. Yeah, he is. So he's coming out of retirement to join the team for some of our early coverage. So it's great to have him back here. Obviously being a three-time champion, he knows this type of golf and how to analyze it. And so it's going to be great to have him back.
Hey, final question for me before I turn it over to Bob. In almost roughly 30 years of producing golf, there have to have been a few close moments, a few close calls in your career, whatever they may be, that I suppose you can now look back on and laugh. Can you give us a one or two samples of what those might have been?
Well, I can tell you the biggest screw up I made. it actually wasn't golf. I was producing Super Bowl 32. And for the end of the anthem, you know, they always have a flyover. And so the Air Force was, they decided to let the American public in on the fact that we have the B-2 bomber, you know, which is that boomerang looking airplane. Yeah. That they had kept top secret. But they decided that they were going to let the B-2 bomber do the flyover. And so we had like 8 phone calls with the Air Force because they were really into this thing. We had fighter jets on each side of the bomber escorting it over the stadium. And one of the plane on the left had a camera there so we could take a shot of this thing. So the anthem starts and we had a screw up with one of our cameras and I was all out of sorts about that. And so when the anthem ended, I go, okay, commercial cue, 2-1. And we hit the break. And then I go, oh my God, I forgot the flyover. How can I forget the flyover? So the way it works when these planes, you know, time this thing out is they know exactly how long the anthem is. Almost all of them are by happenstance to be run about 1:50 long. Some people sing it slower and that may be a little longer, but most of them are 1:50. And so these airplanes circle out there. And then once the anthem starts, they know they have 1:50 to time this thing out to fly over perfectly. Well, it turns out that the B-2 bomber can't do tight circles as like a fighter jet can. So it does these massive circles. And when you're doing the Super Bowl, when the game truck gets it, your first segment is, you know, the opening and the on camera, and you go to commercial, come back, do the intros, go back to commercial, come back, do the anthem and the flyover, go to commercial, and you come back, do the coin toss and kick. So the intro segment, and by the way, all those are timed out to the second, you know, so we know precisely how long everything's going to be. Well, the intro segment took longer than what we thought it was going to be, by almost 2 minutes. So when it was time to for the airplane to start its run, it wasn't at the point where it could get going. It was way out at the far end of its turn. So I made the mistake and went to commercial, but it turns out it was the greatest save I ever made too, because the plane arrived a minute and 30 seconds into the commercial, and we wouldn't have known that. We'd have been sitting there with egg on our face waiting for the thing to fly over, and right. it would have been a no-show. What we ended up doing is we recorded it flying over during the break, and had a great shot of John Elway looking up at it. And we just played that coming out of the break. So it looked like that's what we had planned all along. So it was the biggest mistake I ever made, but it was also the biggest save I ever made too.
Hey, Tommy, you remind me, I was doing an interview with, I'm drawing a blank on his name. I think it's Rasmussen that had started, ESPN.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, when did you know that this venture, it was going to be a success? And he says, well, one night I got a frantic call from my engineer, and he says, I just screwed up. I played the fourth quarter of the football game, and now I got to play the third quarter. And the next day he said he was in his office, and the phone didn't ring once. He said, man, maybe we got some work to do here.
Yeah, that's funny.
All right, Tommy Roy, we can't take any more of your time. You got a busy week. The Open Championship. Rory helped you out with his little victory in Scotland over the weekend. And boy, oh boy, what a cast of players you have before you. And with Tommy Roy at the helm, I know it's going to be a great one. Thank you so much, Tommy Roy, for taking time out. Kelly, I know you want to say goodbye, but I certainly appreciated my time with Tommy Roy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and glad to be part of your podcast.
Thank you so much, Tommy. All the best this week.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, that was a real treat. You know, you hear that term, Bob, if you're passionate about whatever it is you do, it really comes through. And does it ever come through in the passion that Tommy Roy brings to what he does and what he delivers to us as viewers?
Yeah, it was really fascinating to find out that anybody that comes to work for Tommy Roy as part of their golf coverage has to be a golfer. That's a hard, fast rule that he's made, and it certainly worked very well for him for the past 30 years.
It sure has. We thank Tommy Roy of NBC Sports for his time. Also reminds you to listen to the Gary Player podcast that we posted yesterday. It is the week of the 151st Open Championship. Hope you enjoy it. Kelly Elbin signing off for my good friend Bob Bupka on Musings on Golf.